Chapter 14, A Tale of Two Queens. Tiffany took Nightshade, a very small, pathetic creature right now, back to her father's farm with her, tucking her under her cloak for the journey, and then settling her and the Feagles into one of the old-fashioned hay barns. "It's clean and warm here," she said, "with no metal, and I will bring you some food." She looked sternly at the Feagles. They had a hungry look to them. There was an elf all by itself. What could they do with it? "Rob, we met Arthur, Big Yan," she said. "I'm just going to get a lotion for Nightshade to help heal her wounds, and I do not want you to touch her while I am gone. Is that clear?" "Oh, aye, mistress," said Rob cheerfully. "Get yourself off ski and leave yon scunner wi' us." He glared at Nightshade. "If yon elf gies any trouble ye ken, we have your weapons." He shook his claymore in a fashion that clearly showed that he was itching to take it out to play. Tiffany turned back to Nightshade. "I am the Hag of the Hills," she said, "and these Feagles will do my bidding. But they do not like you and your kind, so I suggest you mend your manners, madam, and play the game, or there will be a reckoning." And then, indeed, she was off-ski. But it was a very rapid off-ski, as she trusted the elf very little and the Feagles even less. When Tiffany got back, Nightshade took the healing ointment, and it seemed as if with each smooth stroke the little elf blossomed, becoming more and more beautiful. There was a sparkle about her, and it was like a syrup that covered everything. It shouted, "Am I not beautiful? Am I not clever? I am the Queen of Queens." Then it seemed to Tiffany that her sense of self was being changed, but she had been waiting for it, and she thought, "I'm not having that, my friend." She said, "You will not try your elvish wiles on me, madam." But still she felt the elves' magic reaching out for her like the creep of a sunrise. She screamed, "You will not put your glamour on me, elf!" And the words of the shepherd's count that Granny Aching had used were in her mind. "Yan tan tethera," she chanted, over and over, the singing of the words helping her mind become her own again. It worked. Nightshade began to tone herself down, and now she looked like a farm girl, a dairymaid. She had conjured up a dairymaid's dress for herself, though one that no real dairymaid would ever wear, given that it was adorned with little ribbons and bows, a dainty little slipper-clad foot peeking out from beneath the hem. As a pretty straw bonnet took shape, Tiffany recoiled. The elf had summoned up an echo of the costume she knew very well, one worn by a China shepherdess she had once given to her granny. And as she remembered Granny Aching, she became incredibly angry. How dare this elf try this on her, here, on her very turf? "I demand," Nightshade tried, and then she saw Tiffany's expression. "I would hope." "A country girl. The elvish has begun to leave the building," Tiffany thought with delight. But she still folded her arms and glared at the elf. "I've helped you," she said, "but I am also busy helping other people, people who would have a better life if you weren't here." She narrowed her eyes. "Especially if your people cause mischief. Do things like spoiling our beer. Yes, I know about that, and I know you, elf, and I know what you want. You want your kingdom back, don't you, Nightshade?" There was a growl from the assembled Feagles, and Big Yan said hopefully, "Can we nae throw it back there, mistress?" "Aye," said Rob, "be rid of yon pest." "Well, Rob," said Tiffany, "I am sorry to tell ye there are some folks who think Feagles are a pest." Big Yan went silent, then said slowly, "Weel, we may be pests, ye ken, but a pure bairn has nae reason to dread Feagles." He rose to his full height of 7 inches. Big Yan was very tall for a Feagle, with the scars on his forehead, typical of the taller-than-average, who can find doorways somewhat challenging, and loomed over the elf from the rafters. Tiffany ignored him, turning back to Nightshade. "Am I right?" she demanded. "You want to return to Fairyland? What do you say?" Cunning flickered across Nightshade's sharp little face. "We are like bees," she said at last. "The queen has all the power until she gets older, and then a new queen kills her to take the hive." A wave of anger was suddenly visible. "Peas blossom," she hissed. "He does not believe that the world has changed. It was he who threw me from my people." A contemptuous sneer crossed her lips. "He, who is so powerful he can spoil beer, when we could once destroy worlds." "I could give you some help with your little friend, Peas Blossom," Tiffany said slowly. "I would settle for you as Queen of the Elves again, if you could make all the elves go back once more to their own land and stay there. But if you and your race should come here for the purpose of making humans your slaves, well, you may think you have seen me angry, but then you will know the real meaning of the word rage." As she said that, everything about her flickered in fire, and she remembered facing the queen before, land under wave, knowing where she had come from, where she was going, and that she could no longer be fooled, knowing that no matter how many people dreamed, invited elves to come into the world, she would be there, awake, holding firm. "If you break your vow, the last things you will see are thunder and lightning," she threatened. "Thunder and lightning in your head, and you will die of the thunder. That is a promise, elf." From the look of terror that flickered across Nightshade's face, Tiffany knew that the elf understood. She brought Nightshade some porridge in the morning. The elf looked up at Tiffany as she took the bowl and said, "You could have killed me yesterday. I'd have killed me. Why didn't you? You know I am an elf, and we are merciless." "Yes," said Tiffany, "but we are human, and we do know mercy. I also know I'm a witch, and I'm doing my job." "You are clever, Tiffany Aching. The little girl I almost killed on the hill when the thunder and lightning became solid and hurtful, all teeth and bite." Nightshade was puzzled. "What am I now but a ragged pauper? Friendless, but you, one girl, you took me in when you had no reason to." "I did have a reason," said Tiffany. "I'm a witch, and I thought it possible." She sat down on a milk churn and said, "You must understand that elves are seen as vindictive, callous, spiteful, untrustworthy, self-centred, undeserving, unwelcome nuisances. And that's being nice. I've heard much worse language used about them, especially from people whose children have been taken away, I can tell you. But nothing stays the same. Our world, our iron, your court, your glamour. Did you know, Nightshade, that in Ankh-Morpork, goblins have jobs and are considered to be useful members of the community?" "What?" said the Queen. "Goblins? But you humans hate goblins and their stink. I thought the one we captured was lying." "Well, maybe they do stink a bit, but so do their masters, because for some of them, a stink is money," said Tiffany. "And a goblin who can repair a locomotive can stink as much as he likes. What do you elves have to offer us? You are just folklore now. You've missed the train, in fact, and you have only mischief left and silly tricks." "I could kill you with a thought," said Nightshade with a sly look. "Oh, dear," said Tiffany, holding up a hand to halt the Feagles, each of whom wanted to be the one to get the first fist in. "I hope you don't do so. It would be your last." She looked at the elf, whose sharp little face was quivering with upset as she found herself surrounded by those she did not understand. "Oh, please don't cry. An elf who has been a queen, an elf who wants to be a queen again, surely shouldn't cry." "A queen shouldn't, but I am a remnant of a queen lost in the wilderness." "No, you are in a hay barn. Do you understand the meaning of manual labour, lady?" Nightshade looked puzzled. "No. What does it mean?" "It means earning a living by working. How are you with a shovel?" "I don't know. What is a shovel?" "Oh, dear," said Tiffany again. "Look, you can stay here until you are better, but you must work hard at something. You could try." A boot bounced off the ground beside her, one of her father's, a hole at the toe, and another trying out of sympathy to join in at the heel. "I canny abide boots on my feet, ye ken," said wee Mad Arthur. "But if ye recall, I was raised by shoemakers, and they told me a tale of the elves. Yon scunner ye ha there might ha' talent for it, ye ken." Nightshade turned the boot gingerly over in her hands. "What is this?" she said. "A boot," said Tiffany. "And ye'll get one reet new up your backside if I ha' anything to do with it," Big Jan growled. Tiffany took the boot from the elf and put it down. "We'll talk later, Nightshade," she said. "Thank you for your suggestion, wee Mad Arthur, and yes, I do know the story. It had been in the Good Child's Book of Fairy Tales, and told how two little elves secretly helped a poor shoemaker, but sadly experience had taught Tiffany that a lot of what was in that book bore no relation whatsoever to the real fairyland. But I think that it is just that, a story. "Well, I told you, wee Mad Arthur, you shouldn't have listened to that load of old cobblers," said Rob. It was a day of old sheets and old boots and make-do and mend. And, oh dear, Tiffany thought, she had to check on baby Tiffany, and drop in on Becky Pardon and Nancy Upright. Miss Tick felt that both girls might be of use if she wanted to take on a trainee in the chalk. But she couldn't ask the girls to move in while she had Nightshade at the farm, not unless she gave them each a horseshoe necklace so that they would be protected by the iron. It would have to wait. She was back and forth to the farm all day, in between visits. Her last call of the afternoon was to Mr. Holland, the miller. There were only a few purple blotches on his skin now, and she left Mistress Holland with a second pot of the Merry Day Root Lotion, biting her tongue at the good lady's clear message of, "If only you had been here, I wouldn't have used the wrong herb." When she got back, she found Nightshade perched in the corner of the barn, her merciless eyes pinned on Hugh, who had stalked in and was arching her back and hissing at the elf. The feagles were egging Hugh on with cries of, "Ach, see you, pussycat, gee a scunner, a wee gifty for the knack-mack feagle," interrupted by a sudden, "Crivens, lads, the big wee hag is back." Tiffany stood in the doorway, tapping her foot, and Rob shrank back. "Ach, no," he wailed. "Nay, the tapping of the feets, mistress." Tiffany folded her arms. "Ach, mistress, 'tis a heavy thing to be under a geese," Rob moaned, and Tiffany laughed. Nightshade had questions for her. She had seen people coming to the farm during the day, coming for medicines, for advice, for an ear to listen, and, sadly, sometimes for an eye to see the bruises. "Why do you help these strangers?" she asked Tiffany now. "They are not of your clan. You owe them nothing." "Well," said Tiffany, "although they are strangers, I simply think of them as people, all of them. And you help other people. That's how we do it." "Does every person do it?" said Nightshade. "No," said Tiffany. "Sadly, that is true. But many people will help other people just because, well, because they are other people. That's how it goes. Do you elves not understand this?" "Shall we say that I am trying to learn?" said Nightshade. "And what do you find?" said Tiffany, smiling. "You become a kind of servant," Nightshade sniffed, her delicate nose wrinkling. "Well, yes," said Tiffany, "but it doesn't matter, because one day I might need that person, and then they will very probably help me. It works for us. It always has." "But you have battles," said Nightshade. "I know that." "Yes, but not always, and we are getting better at the knot." "You are powerful, though. You could rule the world," said Nightshade. "Really?" said Tiffany. "Why should I want to do that? I am a witch. I like being a witch. And I like people, too. For every nasty person, there's a nice one, mostly. There is a saying, what goes around comes around, and it means that sooner or later you will find yourself on top, at least for a while. And another time, the wheel turns, and you will not be on top, but you will have to put up with it." She tried to look into Nightshade's eyes, see what the elf was thinking, but she might as well have looked at a wall. The elves' eyes were emotionless. "And I remember the darkness and the rain and the thunder and lightning," she added. "And what good has it done you? You, elf, found in a ditch." For once Nightshade seemed at a loss and looked carefully at Tiffany before saying, "Your way would not work for elves. Every other elf is a challenge. We kill our queens. Every other queen is a rival, and we fight over the hive." She paused as a new thought struck her. "Yet you have your queens of wisdom, and thus there was Granny Aching and Granny Weatherwax, and yes, indeed, Tiffany Aching. You grow older, wisdom flourishes and is passed on. And you never prosper. You live in a cycle of decay," Tiffany said softly, "and you are not bees. They are productive, but they die young and never, ever have a thought." There was a strange look on the elf's face, She was having to think, really think. Tiffany could see it. Nightshade had the face of someone who had already begun to think about a world that had changed, a world with iron that was less welcoming for the fairy folk, a world that liked them well enough in stories but had no real belief in them, gave them no way in. Now she was looking closer, and she was finding a new world she had never thought about before, and she was trying to reconcile it with everything else she knew. And Tiffany could see the battle in her face. Over in Lanka, Queen Magrat had heard about the trouble up in the Ramtops, the attack on the lumberjacks, the deaths and the lost timber. Elves, she thought. They'd seen them off last time, but it hadn't been easy, and it had been a long time since she'd posted guards, well, Sean Og anyway, up by the circle of stones known as the Dancers, or made sure the castle had plenty of horseshoes to hand. She knew how the memory plays tricks, and the old stories had power, and everyone forgot how terrific really means brings terror. Her people would only remember that the elves sang beautifully. They would have forgotten what their song was about. Magrat was not only a queen, but also a witch, of course, and although she was mostly a queen these days, the witch part of her knew that the balance was off, that Granny Weatherwax had left a void behind her, and no matter how hard Tiffany Aching was working to fill it, and that nice backhouse boy she now had, Granny Weatherwax was a hard act to follow. She had held the barrier, held it firm. And if the barrier was no longer strong, Magrat shivered. Anyone who had ever met elven kind knew that terror was absolutely the right response, the only response. For the elves were a plague that could spread rapidly, destroying and harming and hurting and poisoning all they touched. She wanted no elves in Lanka. That evening, Queen Magrat went to her guardrobe and took out her beloved broomstick, sat on it and very carefully tried a lift, and, slightly against her expectations, it took off gently, rising slowly over the castle. She flew around happily for some minutes and told herself, "It's true. Once a witch, always a witch." Being a dutiful wife, when she wanted to be, she mentioned her intentions to her husband late that evening, and to her surprise, King Verrant said, "Back on the old broomstick, my love. Very glad to hear it. I've seen your face when a witch flies by. No man can keep a bird in chains." Magrat smiled and said, "I don't feel like a bird in a cage, my dear, but now we don't have Granny, I feel I must help." "Well done," said Verrant. "We're all coming to terms with what's happening, but I'm sure Mistress Aching will follow in Granny's footsteps."
"It isn't like that," said Queen Magrat. "I think she's walking in her own footsteps."
She sighed.
"But there are elves afoot," she said, "and I believe Tiffany will be at Granny's cottage, no, her cottage, later today, so I must go and see her, offer my support."
Her husband shivered at the mention of elves.
"Of course," Magrat continued firmly, "I also intend to be a good role model for our children. Young Esme is growing up fast, and I want her to see that there's more to being a queen than waving hellos. We don't want her to start kissing frogs, now do we? We all know how that can turn out."
Most princesses never try to kiss toads, however, which had been a source of sadness to the Feagles' toad lawyer for many years. She turned at the door and tossed her husband a baby sling.
"I am quite sure," she said sweetly, "that you can look after our children very well indeed on your own for a little while."
Verrance smiled weakly. Magrat made a face that only a witch would see. "He holds them upside down sometimes," she thought to herself. "He's a very clever man, but give him a baby, and he doesn't really know what to do." She smiled. "He could learn." And when she asked him to change a nappy, when Millie was off helping in the kitchen, he pulled a face, but he did try anyway.
"I want to help," Magrat said firmly to Tiffany, landing her broomstick outside what they both still thought of as Granny's cottage, less than an hour after Tiffany had arrived herself, the news quickly flashing up to the castle since Magrat had made it known she wanted to be informed. "I am the queen, but I am also a pretty good witch."
Tiffany looked into Magrat's eyes and saw her longing to be a witch once more, just for a little while, and then Magrat said, "We have had elves here, Tiffany."
"Elves?"
And Tiffany remembered Granny Weatherwax telling her how Magrat had fought the elves before, shot one right through the eye with a crossbow indeed.
"I have experience, Tiffany," Magrat continued, "and you are going to need everyone you can get if the elves start coming through." She paused to think. "Even novices. Have you spoken to Miss Tick?" "Yes," said Tiffany. "She says she has found one or two likely girls, but not everyone can be a witch, even if they want to be. And at the moment, it's not possible to take a girl on in my steading on the chalk." "Why not? And what about your friend Petulia, her with the piggery?" "Well, she has the skills," said Tiffany, ignoring the first of Magrat's questions. "But Petulia helps her husband to run the farm, says she spends all her time amongst creatures who go grunt, and that sometimes includes the old pig farmers. And you have to admit that pig boring is good for everybody, even the pigs. It's terrible to hear the squealing if she's not there. Well, we may still need her up here, pigs or not. And heavy waterproof boots can take an arrow," said Magrat. "So, any sign of elves down on the chalk?" Tiffany coloured, uncertain how Magrat would take her news about Nightshade, but thinking a little guiltily that at least it would save her having to tell Nanny Ogg herself. She told her about the beer first, then about Nightshade, how the elf was staying at her parents' farm, watched over by Feagles, making it impossible to take on any other help. Magrat knew the Feagles would keep the elf from causing any trouble, but she was surprised by what Tiffany told her. "Are you telling me you think you can trust an elf?" she said. Her face had paled. "No elf is trustworthy," she added. "They wouldn't even know the meaning of the word. Yet you trust this elf? Why?" "No," said Tiffany, "I don't trust her, but I think this elf wants to live. Nightshade has already seen for herself that our world is changing. The iron, you know. And now she has encountered ideas unknown to her. We might just be making some progress, and I think it's worth a try. Perhaps she might then go back to Fairyland and persuade other elves to think like her, to leave us alone." She paused. "The Kelder of the Feagles warned me, Magrat. She said that Granny's going would leave a hole, that we needed to take great care. It's the elves. It has to be. So if this elf can help, well, I must try." But if those others do start coming, you're going to need help, Tiffany," said Magrat. She thought for a moment. "I understand the Baron on the Chalk has a wife who is a witch." "Yes," said Tiffany, "Letitia Keepsake. But she's not trained, and her husband is a bit, how should I say it, snobby." Magrat said, "Well, my dear, if you want, I'll fly down there and drop in for tea one day, and hint, in a subtle way, that the idea of being a witch for the people at large might be a good idea. My Verence, you know, likes to be thought of as a king of the people, and in fact, I feel sure he thinks I'm being a good example to the population by working as a witch now. He talks like that sometimes, but I love him nevertheless. The idea of this Letitia being friends with the Queen might stop her husband interfering." Tiffany said, "I am amazed. Just like that." "Trust me," said Queen Magrat. "Crowns are important, you know." Tiffany flew back to the chalk, feeling a bit happier. Magrat would be a useful ally, and perhaps Letitia would be able to help too. But we are still short of witches, so we must take pains to get more, she thought. Furious pains. That means pulling in every witch and likely witch to learn at least some of the craft and how to deal with the glamour of elves. Elves. Nastiness for the sake of being nasty. As Granny Aching had told her, they would take away the stick of a man with no legs. Nasty, unpleasant, stupid, annoying. Trouble and discord just for the pleasure of it. Worse, they brought actual horror and terror and pain. And they laughed, which was bad enough because their laughter was actually musical, and you could wonder why such wonderful music could come from such unpleasant creatures. They cared for nobody except themselves, and possibly not even that. But Nightshade. Perhaps there was one elf for whom the wheel was turning, especially the iron wheels.